Welcome to Theatre Voice, a podcast all about performance from the V&A Museum, featuring interviews with all kinds of practitioners from the theatre world. They might not be the first thing you think about when watching a piece of theatre, but hair, makeup and wigs especially are probably the most labour-intensive and time-consuming aspect of a production. Few people know that better than Giuseppe Canas, head of wigs, hair and makeup at the National Theatre, where he leads a team of about 24 people as they stitch individual human hairs onto scalps, they forge eyeballs out of silicon, mix their magic recipe for gallons of fake blood, mould scars from latex and assemble from scratch every single element that makes productions come to life. Journalist Sam Marlowe went to talk to Giuseppe in his workshop at the National, where they sat down to chat about his decades-long career and the skills needed to be good at the job, including high doses of diplomacy since they have to sit with the actors in the minutes before they go on stage. Then they had a little nose around Giuseppe's department and encountered all kinds of weird and wonderful things along the way. Here's Sam Marlowe with Giuseppe Canas.
Let me just start by asking you, can you just outline your role?
So my role as a head of department, first of all, I give you a little structure. This my job title is head of wigs, hair and makeup, because we don't just make wigs, but we look after all aspects of makeup, including special effects, prosthetics, silicone work, blood, gory. It also incorporates everything to do with hairdressing. So haircut, hair colouring, we work a lot with actors' natural hair. I personally look after both the production and the running of every single show that comes to the National Theatre. Obviously, I don't do that by myself.
Sure.
I'll be dead. I have a lovely and amazing talented team that I'm very proud to represent in every opportunity, made up of my deputy, which is a link between the person that shares my views, the person that allows me to to be strategic about the development of the shows and the development of the department, from welfare to the team to new techniques to training to the duty of care that as a manager I need to have. I have four supervisors, or called project managers, and I have a team of five senior assistants, four assistants, and a couple of juniors.
Wow.
And plus the apprenticeship scheme that we have at the National Theatre. This pool of people, which is roughly, usually we are about 25 of us, we look after the production and the running of the show. My job specific, being the head, I am the manager, so I look after the administration and the finance of the big budget that WAM has at the National Theatre. Mm. I'm very happy. There's many colleagues in the industry that do suffer a little bit of going through a managerial and senior management kind of level because you do less craft. But right. I knew that, and there was a conscious choice because I love the opportunity to be strategic and to try to be more productive and to also bring some clarity to my industry, put in the map. For years and years and years, our craft, mainly not in London or in the commercial and theatre, but in the kind of spread of amateur theatre, it's always been like, I've seen like a hobby or someone can do the hair and makeup,
right.
Which is not really what we do, because we study for years at university in order to be able to be licensed in order to work on a third party, which is an actor, a model, or a singer. People in my position, they have to be, I think, inspiring leaders. It's a creative industry, so quite difficult to manage your time.
I'm sure. Personalities, big personalities.
Because also you put yourself in it. So the way you give feedback is different. The way you treat your actors is different. Because it's a completely... and I'm not saying that all creative people are more sensitive. Yes, they are. But you have to take that into account. You are creating a platform and a service for people to feel comfortable.
Mm.
Can you imagine me selecting the wrong person to work with, you know, Danger, Judy Dench. Yeah. That person is going to be with her until the 5 minute call, just 5 minutes before. If I put someone that doesn't have the sensitivity to understand when it's time to withdraw, when it's time to put forward, when it's time to look after, when it's trying to disappear, mm-hmm. you can be the top technician on earth.
Yeah.
You can be the best wig maker, makeup artist, hairdresser. It's not going to work.
Yeah. So can you tell me how your career developed? How yeah. did you come to be a professional?
Oh, my God.
Where did you train?
I trained in the UK.
Right.
So I came into the UK many, many years ago, in 1994, from a small town in Sardinia, Italy. So that was really, for me, a moment of trying to, you know, I took my national diploma. I think I was 19 and really didn't know what to do. I went to university. Back in Italy, I was studying civil engineering. It wasn't really going with me.
Right, that's quite a change of direction.
I was good with numbers and a great mathematic head, but my creativity did not allow me to stay there, thankfully. So I came here just purely to learn the language, and slowly I did a bit of research trying to understand where the best training courses. And in those days, we're talking about the 90s, the UK were the best vocational training in my field, affordable. So it was a very easy option for me to stick around, and in those days we could.
Yeah. We all missed that.
I know.
Bit scary and depressing.
I know. I had to work through my into my head.
I bet you did.
Because, you know, it's just part of this as well. I felt very welcomed, and my national diploma was valid, so mm-hmm. I was able to get into Westminster University and study my speciality, which was hair and makeup for the entertainment industry.
So what had sort of pushed you towards hair and makeup?
Do you know what? I always loved the art of makeup artistry. I remember sitting in very boring Greek and Latin classes and drawing, instead of listening to, you know, what I had to listen to. So I always kind of have always been creative in a way, but mainly for my own pleasure of discovery. I was obsessed with comics, I was obsessed with drawing.
Right.
But the actual activities of me doing makeup or hair when I was in Sardinia, it was like maybe helping, you know, in a end of year play kind of thing.
Right.
Super amateur, working in a club for to help some fashion shows, this kind of amateur vibe. And so I had a little bit of that, and I thought, well, you're not too bad, although I had no formal training. So when I came here, I thought, it would be great to follow this, because, you know, you start reading and you realize the older you get that there is a career. It's not just, you know, people improvising all of a sudden, doing hair and makeup for telly or for film or for theatre. So I studied very, very quietly into vocational courses. My English wasn't that great, so I couldn't do any kind of academic courses yet. I was working towards that, so I was doing some vocational into beauty therapy, skincare, basic makeup, and slowly but surely, I qualified and I started doing little jobs every night, a little bit in film. I had no agent in those days, and still today, I don't have an agent because in my industry, at this level, you don't really need an agent. If I will go freelancer, then you do.
Sure.
Like everything else. So I started working. I remember my first pay job was this music video for a group called Cat People. And it was the biggest, most longest job that I'd ever done in my career, actually, because there was no money, there was no budget, and I had to create full prosthetic body makeup and hair to these three creatures that were singing on a on a studio in Brixton. It was so stunning. So great experience.
They actually look like cats.
They look like alien cats. That's what I can say. Which is very typical of our industry, of my industry. When you start, you do a lot of free work.
Sure.
Because there's no money. Because people expect your services for free. For a strange reason, in the world, If you need to eat and you need to catering a shoot, you pay. But if you want to have rare makeup, you might end up not paying.
Right.
So, great opportunity came in for me to move to Australia for personal reasons and for work reason. I was trying. I knew that the film industry and was moving from kind of from the UK towards different grounds when labour was a little bit cheaper. We became very expensive in the UK. 2001, I decided to go to Australia. I know Fox Studios was producing quite a lot. Moulin Rouge, they were doing the remaking of Star Wars, they were doing the remaking of Matrix, Reloaded, and I just want to be there.
Right. Fox Studios is
Fox Studios is Sydney, Australia.
Sydney, yeah.
So, went there, got a shock on my life because I realised I had to have a visa. Naively. That's the downside of free movement in Europe. Oh my God, I need a visa. So, in 2003, Disney Theatrical arrived in Australia to open a new production of The Lion King in Australia.
Right.
And at that time, I was working at the Sydney Theatre Company, and I think the technical director said to me, oh, Disney's coming to Australia to put together the massive success of The Lion King that just opened in London and Holland. Would you be interested in sending your CV? I said, of course. Although I had no intention of working in theatre.
Right.
And I'll tell you why, because when you start college, when you go to college, it's a lot of push that gets done into film.
Okay.
That's where their money is, that's where you, your career is, etc., etc. Which in a way is correct. Although the longevity of working in theatre, I'm the typical example of someone that actually, as soon as I start working in theatre, I never look back.
Right.
And in 2003, I was lucky enough to get the position of the head of the department of Sydney the Lion King, and then creates almost a decade for me of working in several production around the Southeast Asia. So I worked in Sydney, Melbourne, Taiwan, Shanghai,
wow.
Johannesburg. So for, I think that lot of relationship lasted for 7 years. Mm. So up
of course
to the point,
makeup on that show,
makeup
is...
in there is amazing. Yeah. I was lucky enough to be chosen to also be helping new production around the world. There was few associate designers that maybe were not available at the time, so I was able to being for them for so long and being familiar so familiar with the show. I was able to travel the world for publicity, come to London to do some EPK filming of the show. All that world was all around the Lion King Disney, and right. Disney's a company They really look after you. They really, if you are a good member of staff, they really support you in a lot of movements. So it was lovely. It was fantastic. And my last production with them was in 2010 in Singapore, when The Lion King was opening a new part of Singapore, Marina Bay Sand, with the restaurant, hotels, casinos, and theatres. So we were part of that. And I love that. I remember the year I was like, this is going on for a long time now. And although it's the same show, but if you think about it, the city is different, the cast always changes, the designs largely adapt to the new things, the new products. So there is a movement of that, but it's a movement within one thing.
Yeah.
Think about it now, I do 25 shows a year.
Yeah.
It's quite different. Quite different brain speed. 2010, Singapore, the head of the Department of the National Theatre finally decides to resign. When I say finally, not because finally she's going, it's because she had an amazing career of 38 years at the National Theatre. And the ads went out, and I remember, although I was away, a friend of mine, she sent me an email and said, just throwing this on your way, I know you're very busy in Singapore, but the National is looking for a new other department. I fell a little through with that. I was reading through, and I was like, no way. Yeah, I'm going to take that job, it's too much, and the person before me was like big shoes to fill. She was, you know, amazing in the industry, and she
what was her name?
Joyce Bagari. Mm-hmm. She brought the National Theatre from the old Vic to the new building. After a couple of months, another email comes, this time direct from the National Theatre. Are you sure you don't want to apply for this position? It's like, okay, you're knocking twice. Yeah, I need to answer to this, you know. I can't, you know. One thing is to, you know, to snob a reality for once. Twice is a mistake. So I applied for the position and I went through a couple of Skype interviews with the National Theatre, and the more I was getting to know it, the more I was realising it was huge, but very interesting. I was like, oh, okay, will I be able to do this? I was ready for a change. So I put all my effort into these interviews, and I remember at some point the National Theatre flew me from Singapore on a red eye to London, 13 hours flight, come to London, went to a motel, had a shower, back straight to an interview at the National Theatre, which was on Saturday. And my interview is where there was a head of costume, there was their technical director, I think someone from HR. I did the interview and then I flew them a couple of hours later. And after a couple of days, I got a call, you got the job. I started on the 5th of September 2011.
Amazing. So obviously you work really closely with designers.
Yes.
And I guess lighting as well must be a huge element.
Yeah.
How do you come up with your inspirations for makeup and hair looks in relation to how the designer works? Do you look to things like pop culture and fashion?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, as well as obviously costume history and all that
of
stuff.
Of course. Well, the process is quite pragmatic up to a point, and then becomes extremely creative and organic. So you are pragmatic in a way when you lead in towards the beginning of rehearsals, when I do the part of my job that a lot of people hate, which I don't, which is budgeting, communication, parameters, what's your producer expectation, what are you expecting from me, mm-hmm. what I'm expecting from you, those conversations. When that's out of the way, then we get to the organic creation of the show. Yeah. And obviously the person that is the most important in my field is the costume designer. In the UK, costume designer also is the hair and makeup and wig designer. But I have to be very careful saying that, because actually in the industry is evolving. It's not like that anymore. It's not that black and white anymore. Okay. The conceptual design stays in the hands of a theatre design. Could mm-hmm. be costume designer, could be costume and set designer together, could be costume separate from sets. But now you see more and more, because the detailed of the actual creation of the pieces, that you see many hair and makeup, either associate designer or designers, they can look after just the nature. Obviously, I'm talking about shows that are extremely heavy on hair, extremely heavy on makeup. I'm not talking about shows that are not necessarily heavy with that.
Sure.
They might not need someone. No. So the costume designer is the person that brings the conceptual ideas to me. Some designers, less and less, produce drawing. But the majority of the designers in our days, they work on Pinterest, we work on share files, we Dropbox. So we create, so the community, the idea of the aesthetic comes from them.
Right.
So I sit down with a costume designer, and the costume designer is, so we are in 1993, we are in the 80s, but from the 80s I just want this element, I don't want this element, so we can start sharing ideas. And what the designer brings into the National is a series of concept and a series of reference material, pictures, ideas, colours, mood boards.
Right.
From those mood boards, then we then create and design the element of the show regarding hair and makeup. Wigs, hair pieces, hair extensions, hair colours, blow dry.
Fantastic. Okay, brilliant. Let's go and have a look.
This is my little caboose.
This is where it all happens. Well, we've got all these incredible pictures. Okay. Who's this?
This is from Pinocchio, actually.
Is it Geppetto?
Stromboli.
Oh, Stromboli. Yeah. So that's incredible. It's extraordinary eyebrows.
Oh, yes. Actually, funny enough, because this was one of the initial fittings. I didn't have any brows made up yet. So I took a moustache, yeah. I cut in two, and I just created two eyebrows.
That's great.
And there you go, obviously. Anne-Marie Duff here.
Anne-Marie Duff covered in, I guess that's coal dust.
Yes, yeah. Even coal. This was Husbands and Son, was the show. And then a few little inspiration from, you know, what we did, Wanted Dot Land. You know, when I see something that I like, I print it out.
That's very disturbing. Madonna. This picture here, it's Madonna from the cover of True Blue, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, with a tilted face.
Her eyes and her mouth are the wrong way round.
She looks like she's got a beard.
Yes, that's incredible. Yeah. And then there's these, what do you call these? The actual head.
Blocks.
So there's
head blocks.
Wig blocks everywhere, wig covered blocks. In amazing
and as you can see,
hairdos.
You know, the hair gets done one by one.
Because
it's just a refront, obviously. We're reusing a back that we must have used earlier somewhere else. Or
so
just
every one of those is stitched in individually,
yeah,
those
knotted
hairs.
In with this hook.
That's incredible.
To recreate practically your hairline.
Right.
So that's the intent.
Amazing.
When some people say you guys make wigs, no, we made head of hair, which is very beautiful.
And is this real hair?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. All natural hair. Human hair. We call it human hair. Now, human hair is not necessarily someone that comes to you, cut the hair, put it there. No, there's a lot of a big process of finding the right hair. Obviously, as you can imagine, here we are extremely keen on ethically sourcing where
yes.
the hair comes from.
Yeah.
It's my duty as a citizen, but also my duty as a head of Hair and Makeup International to look for places that do not exploit religious purposes. No child exploitation labour, nothing like that. So it's quite hard, but I think we've got suppliers that can guarantee where the hair comes from.
Where does it mostly come from?
Mostly comes from villages. For they actually have people that encourage the kind of industry and they collect the hair.
In what parts of the world? All over
majority,
the world?
Majority of that is in Eastern Europe.
Right.
Because the type of hair. And we go as further as possibly India. Then when you go to Southeast Asia, the structure of the hair changed quite drastically.
Yeah.
From a round structure comes to a much flatter structure,
yeah.
which is difficult for us to achieve certain style with the hair. So I don't like that type of hair. You can't actually tease that hair as well as you can tease what we call a Caucasian hair.
Right.
So it depends, but now nowadays we get Afro curly hair, because it depends on what we're doing. If we're doing a modern low style, I can put any hair. If I'm going to do a kind of elaborate up style, then I need to try to buy hair that is structurally still quite good for us to tease it, for us to colour it, for us to manipulate that, and I will show you in a minute. And also, as you can see, Megan's doing a refront here. Refront is very popular. What I mean by a refront? A refront is when we reuse a stock wig and we just change the hairline, which is what customised the majority of our wigs.
Right.
Why do we do that? Hey, because it's very expensive to make a wig.
Yeah. I can see why, when you have to do it hair by hair like that.
Exactly. So it's very labor intense
yeah.
and extremely expensive. I'll tell you then how much it will probably cost us. And so to reuse when we can, it's a complete waste of money.
Yeah.
It's not a very good economy. But also, I won't be able to provide the service to the national with the budget that I have to work with if I didn't have to use that.
Right.
And also, I find it ethically great.
Yes,
so we can reuse
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
Especially when we make so many of them. And you guys, how many wigs have you dressed today?
We've done 60 today.
Oh, gosh.
Ready for the show tomorrow.
Ready for tomorrow's tech, yes.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Really?
That's okay, we've had lots of help.
I told you that work with very talented
yeah,
people. Yeah,
no, incredible. I mean, yes. It's just the atmosphere in here is amazing.
Nice, it's gorgeous.
So kind of charged. It's fantastic.
And this is Adele.
Thank you. Hi, Adele.
Adele's selecting.
Oh, I'm tidying up the desk. It's an absolute. I'm just my show's that middle bit in there. That's my next show.
Okay.
And I just wait to see actors to have fittings with the designer.
Right.
So now I'm just tidying up.
Before the storm.
Yeah, calm before the storm. They start rehearsing on stage the end of next week, so there's about a week to kind of get everything completely right.
And which show is this one?
It's called All of Us. It's going to be in the Dorfman.
Right.
And it's about kind of austerity and disability cuts and things. It's not the jolliest of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But the company are lovely. The people in it are absolutely lovely.
So these are quite standard sort of hair like people.
Yeah,
because
it's modern day. Yeah, it's supposed to be modern day. So
would you normally make wigs for that, or do you often just work with the hair, existing hair?
It's a bit of both. This particularly though, they play different characters. So the wigs they're having is to be a different character, and then their own hair they're going to use for their other, you know, the other character.
Got you.
That's why they've got wigs, and then we're just adding some hair pieces because she wants to have, you know, some green hair.
I'm assuming he's modern, isn't it?
It's modern day, yeah. So, and one of the guys is playing a couple of characters, so we've just made a beard for him and a tash, and he's got a wig, so he might play another character completely different.
Right.
They want him to look different.
Right.
So. And there's things like tattoos, and there's some blood effects and some scarring. So even when we've got modern day, I mean, we did a modern day comedy a couple of years ago, which we thought there'd be nothing in it because it's modern day, and it ended up with like 20 something wigs in it because people were playing loads of different characters. So even if something's modern, sometimes they still have lots of wigs in it.
Tell me how the tattoos are done. I'm
intrigued
by this.
All the supervisors have like a Bible for their show. So this is my lady that's written it. You might recognise her, Francesca Martinez. She's a comedian.
Yes.
Does a lot of telly.
Yeah.
So she's written this piece and she's in it. So one of my girls, Franny, who's in it, her thing is to look, her character, it says she's very tattooed and pierced. She's got piercings, which will do obviously fake. So we went through, that's the hairstyle reference I've got, which is, the green bits on my shelf are the green bits of hair.
Right.
That's what I'm going to add into her hair, because they want that look, but it to be green.
Okay.
So her own hair is very long and dark. So I balayage those, so that the dark is her root colour, and then she'll have like green bits coming down, and we'll achieve that look.
Right.
She's going to have like three hairstyles. So this was hair that I bought that was blonde, and then I've dyed it to be brown and green. And then that'll be clips. It's got little snap clips which will go into her hair. There's like little clips.
Proper extension.
Yes, great.
And then they wanted, she wanted to have on her wrist, live fast, die young. So we've got a tattoo company we use, and we just tell them what we want. I gave them the measurements and the reference. I gave him the reference font, and then I found that one tattoo from a shop, and he's just he's reproduced it on this like big sheet.
This is a sort of death's head butterfly.
Yeah, skull. Yeah,
yeah,
skull.
Yeah.
Well, she's gonna have that on the back of her neck. She's gonna have live fast on one wrist and die young, and in the play she actually slits her wrist. So
they're
it's a
down
bit
for you
of,
already.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And then so that's what.
So is it like a sort of transfer?
Yeah. Completely. You stick it on, you put water, and then you peel it off, like you had when you were a kid.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly.
We might age it a little
but
bit.
He can
just
do you
just
what?
Make him more real.
One of my chaps is having. So Kevin is having lots of things done, but this chap is supposed to be like a war veteran, and he's got like shrapnel stuff, so we're doing like a scar on his leg.
But
that's real, that's real.
Okay.
I'm not that good. That is real. But we're doing something like that for the stage. Something like that.
Right.
Not as much colour in that. But these were just like, we have trials.
And how is that achieved? Is that with a putty?
It's like this. It's like a silicone we've just put on a lathe. Yeah, of course. These are different sizes. I think they're going to be bigger, but you can just put it on, and then you can paint round it from the stage. Obviously.
Yes.
And it's going to be on his leg, so he's going to have like a big one. He wants a big thing on his leg, and he's going to just lift. We'll probably paint round that a bit as well.
Well, once
and then he just
glued.
Wants to lift it up. Mm. It's going to be a very quick, a really quick image. So I don't think some stuff we do is much more refined.
Yes.
But this is going to be on his leg with makeup around it, and it's literally going to be like a little flash.
It's sort of silicone on a kind of gauze,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's
yeah.
Just wig lace. That's just fine wig lace that we put at the front of the wig.
It's to make it more durable as well.
Mm. Yeah, so you can use it again and again. It's kind of make it quite cost effective.
Incredible.
As well.
Basically, even if the show is considered not such a big show compared to others that we do, he's got everything.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of working in this place. The ability of all of us to chip in from skills that we always use it instead of just using one skill and then you never use it for years and then you start again. So it's great.
Whose is that? Is that one of Leslie's?
No. I think Leslie.
Leslie's
here.
Lauren's stressing it out now for tonight. Yeah,
so this is Leslie Van Bell's extraordinary wig from the visit, which is like a sort of...
Have you seen it?
I have. Kind of confection of...
Doesn't she look beautiful?
Ice cream coloured curls.
Yeah, stunning.
Absolutely stunning. Yeah. And do you then go and see her before the show and put the wig on her and attach it? And,
So this team there is Lauren today, for example, will finish that. Lauren's been here from 10 o'clock this morning, if not even earlier. Lauren will have a dinner at 5 o'clock, and then from, let's say, 6:30 onwards, Lauren will be down the stage until 10:30, 11 o'clock tonight.
Wow.
So they'll work a really long day.
Yeah.
Working long days is quite tiring. It's got a benefit of reducing your total work hours of the week.
Right.
The majority of my team is contracted for 40 hours a week.
Right.
And we, as you know, we are very strong unionized house, and we follow instruction very well. Mm-hmm. And also, part of my job is their well-being as well. So I have to make sure that I need to protect the work-life balance.
Absolutely.
At any cost. This room is a mess, but please come through. This is what we call a hot room. It's got all my stock. So you have here something like a couple of thousand wigs.
Goodness me.
That we make and we reuse. They're divided by the length and colour and shape. Like you've got bobs, you've got mullets, you've got synthetic hair pieces, you've got short blonde, you've got long, you've got white light blonde.
Wow.
And what I do, we clean it, we keep it, and we reuse it. These wigs will take one of my amazing team possibly between 40 to 50 hours. So it's like a week and a day of work.
Right.
Working on commercial, fast rhythms. If you think about it, if you're coming out of college, you probably make a wig in a month.
Right.
These ladies and gentlemen will make a wig for me in a week.
That's incredible.
So that wig will probably... So the reason why we use oven is because we can't hair dry with a hair dryer.
Oven here.
This is like an incubator. Like,
goodness me! So it's like looks like a big glass cupboard, but in fact, it's an oven. Goodness!
And that's
it's
how
very
you,
hot.
We bake them, we cook them, we set them, and the set will last for a couple of days.
And how do you clean them then?
We wash them like you wash your hair.
Really, with the shampoo.
The majority of the week we wash them on the block, so they don't back up. That's lesson number two. And they get treated with conditioning. When they get a little bit dry, we do some stretcher conditioning treatment, keratin treatment.
Gosh.
We treat them like normal hair.
I was going to say keratin treatment. It costs you a lot at the salon.
So, yes.
£200.
Final room for us is what we call the special effect room. This is where we do all the silicone work.
Ah.
At the moment, we're creating a back piece for a show called Mana. This back piece is going to create an effect where the actor get a big slash wound at the back and it gets sewed in every night.
Wow.
So that is going to be the piece that's going to be worn like a little singlet. So you, audience, you just see the effects at the back.
This is fascinating.
It'll be full of blood and full of...
This is the Moira Buffini play, isn't it, in Manor? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, can I touch it?
Of course, I think it's dry. Yes, you can
so
touch it.
So this is like a sort of apron-shaped piece of flesh-coloured silicon.
Yeah.
Which will sit on the actor's
face. Yeah, and it will be all coloured and pigmented. Like, for example, we did this for Peter Ginder's all the... little prosthetic noses they were using in the show.
Wow, look at those.
And they're all made of silicone.
Wow.
Used to make ears.
What would something like that be like to wear for the actor? They can breathe. Oh,
they can breathe. We make sure that the effect is not covering the actual nostrils. So every time we do work like that, on precision work, obviously on works like that, a mannequin will be enough. We do take a facial life casting of our actor. So that we have our actor.
So this is a cast of an actor's face. What's that made of?
It's plaster.
Plaster. Right. Plaster, it's quite heavy, isn't it, actually?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So
it's
we
kind
use
of a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
All the details, every line on the eyelid, and
you can see everything. We use the same product that your dentist uses to do your teeth.
Right.
To get the exactly shape and size of your teeth. We that's why the details. Look, you can see the pore of the skin.
Yes.
We use that, which is safe to use on the actor's head. We need to make sure that the breathing apparatus are kept free. The reason why I'm doing this is because then when the actor goes away in the rehearsal room and disappears for me, it's quite availability. We work in a very short time.
So we
do six-week production. So for a director to release an actor to do this type of work will be quite impossible. So I take your face and then I build whatever I need to build and then I give you back there in 6 weeks' time. Okay?
So, oh gosh, so there's a little pig nose on top of the plaster nose, which has little piggy bristles growing out of it. That's incredible. Yeah. Look at that.
Then we
Amazing.
Do the same thing with eyes, cream.
And I'm looking at a purple box full of eyes now. Silicon. This is silicon again.
This is silicon. You see these red veins actually made of red little thread.
Oh, so, yes, I can see it.
It's pushed in within. But then we do stuff like, obviously, blood, masks. We have like a blood cupboard. Obviously, we do mix up our blood as well, but we buy... Like you said, obviously you and I know about that.
Yeah, whole cupboard full of blood.
Whole cupboard full of blood. Different type of bloods as well. And that's us.
Wonderful. That's really, really cool.
Sam Mallow was talking to Giuseppe Canas. The producers are Tim Bano and Helen Gush for the V&A Museum. Theatre Voice is an audio archive of conversations about British theatre. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit theatrevoice.com to listen to hundreds of interviews with leading theatre makers. Thanks for listening.